When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
You're tuned in to Heat Check with Trista Crick.
On this episode of the Heat Check, we have a special guest on the show today, James Herbert of CBS Sports. James has been a feature writer for a very long time, was kind enough to carve out an entire hour where we delve into the process of writing about the league, how he chooses his subjects, and what he learned from profiling such under-the-radar stars such as Jose Alvarado, Scotty Barnes, to superstars like Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Pascal Siakam. It was a fascinating conversation. I learned a ton. Can't wait to get into it. So do me a favor, my man. Drop that beat. First and foremost, again, thanks for coming on the show. I think you've got one of the funniest feeds on Twitter.
Thank you.
One of the most, it's a cool feed, right? It's got all this stuff. I try to keep up on it, even some things that make it on your feed. I'm like, oh man, I haven't seen that before. I think NBA Twitter is the best part of Twitter, you know, one of the best at least. What do you think happens to that community if Twitter goes away?
I'm terrified. I have no idea. I don't know where I'm going to go to talk about basketball with people who I don't like know personally. I mean, I've got like group texts, I think like everybody's got. I got my work Slack and some other stuff like that. But like, I don't know. I don't want to be on like NBA Reddit all day, but maybe I'll have to be. Maybe I'll have to learn how to use Discord. I have no idea. I never even installed the app. I'm honestly like, I'm not sure. Like I was watching last night, everybody was talking about, I mean, I was watching games and then I was also listening to one of those Twitter spaces, which had like 20,000 people on it talking about what might happen generally. People talking about moving to Mastodon and all of this stuff. That's another thing I've yet to try. And I'm just thinking like, if this is the end, that sucks. Cause like, I mean, a lot of my professional opportunities have come directly because of Twitter. I met my wife on NBA Twitter. Like, that's why I live in Brooklyn. That's why I'm here. Like, yeah, like,
no fucking
this
way.
Is like, yeah, like, so I don't, I mean, on the one hand, like, well, at least like Twitter was around so that could happen. So maybe it served its purpose for me. But on the other hand, like, this actually is meaningful to me. I know it's stupid. I'm mostly just saying dumb stuff and making jokes and whatever. But like, it is like genuinely been a huge part of my adult life.
I think I have a love-hate relationship with Twitter because so much of it is toxic. But then when you realize it could just go away completely, you're like, well, where am I going to make fun of LeBron? Like, for lying. Like, where are the memes going to go? I wonder if we're all sort of feeling that I guess it's like a pre-loss. You know, we haven't lost it yet, but we kind of feel like we're going to. And we're not really sure how we're going to connect if it does go away. You're one of my favorite feature writers in the NBA. How do you go about picking a subject? Like, could you shed some light on your process of how you write a story?
Sure. I mean, part of it is just like, if there's a player I find interesting for whatever reason, and I feel like there's a story to be told that's like a little bit different, or I just don't know that much about the guy. Or maybe I know some things, but I'm curious about other things. Like, I'll then go and start researching and seeing what other people have written and seeing like, is there something I can add to this? Is there something that I don't know? Then I'll try to pursue it. A lot of times it's not much more complicated than like, I like watching this player and I think I could do a feature on him well. Like the most recent one I did was Jose Alvarado. And like last year, I think like a lot of people, I didn't really know anything about him when he first like got in the Pelicans rotation. Like when I first saw his name, like he wasn't somebody I was paying attention to before the draft. He went undrafted, but I saw him play. I was like, well, this guy, like he plays so freaking hard. Like he is really fun to watch. And then as the season went on, it was like, all right, like this guy is a super fan favorite. He seems like he has an awesome personality. He like clearly has a cool story. And I was just like, I'm definitely profiling him one day. Like I just kind of like said that to myself. It didn't end up happening last year, but like the Pelicans were like literally the first game on the regular season schedule here in Brooklyn. And I knew, I was just like, I'm going to request him and try to make it happen. And then I'll go from there. And that was like sort of a passion project. Like nobody, like I didn't have an editor assigning me a Jose Alvarado story, but like, I just wanted to write about Jose Alvarado because I like watching him play. And I thought there was something to be done there. Other times it could just be that like I've watched somebody and I've noticed something about their game that is interesting. And like, they've been written about one way. And I think I could add to it by focusing on something different or like whatever it is. There's a lot of ways you can like start, but I think you like, it has to start from a place of like genuine curiosity. And it has to start from a place of like, I want to do this. Like I want, cause if you're going to like do one of these and write like a fairly long one, rather than just like bust out a column or whatever, which like I do as well. But if I'm going to invest the time to do a profile, like I want to actually find this person interesting. I don't want it to feel like it's a slog and I'm just doing it cause it's my job. Like these things are hard. Some of them, like last year, I wrote a story that went up like right at the end of the regular season on Scottie Barnes. And the first interview I did was like the first week of the season. And I didn't think it was going to take that long, but that just kind of happened. And sometimes it is, like sometimes it's literal months.
How come? Is it just because you have to, it takes you down a direction and then you have to find sort of people who would, you know, help shed light on the thing that you're, you know, delving into? Like, for example, with Alvarado, you had to speak with Fred Van Fleet. Or is that the reason why? Or why does the writing process take so long?
Yeah, well, part of it is probably on me and probably shouldn't take that long in some of these instances where it's taking me like months and months. Yeah, usually it's related to access. Usually it's related to like, I don't think I can tell this story properly without getting like maybe a follow-up interview with the player, or maybe it's an old coach or something that I haven't talked to yet, or a teammate that I want to get when the team comes back to town or whatever it is. But usually it's just like, I have like, I'll start transcribing my stuff and look at what I got and try to outline it. And I'm like, I'm almost there, but like, I need a little bit more. And then the other part of it is, sometimes it's just I'm working on multiple things at the same time and I'm busy with other stuff. And like the like not super urgent, not super time sensitive profile is the thing that ends up getting pushed back. Because if I have to like go to a Nets practice and write about the latest Kyrie incident, then like that's what I'll do that day instead of like making a phone call about Jose Alvarado or whatever.
Right.
Check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Well, I wanted to kind of mention some of the articles you wrote that I wanted to hear a little bit more about. You mentioned the Scottie Barnes article, and that was published on April 8th before he won Rookie of the Year. And you said, you know, you started working on it the first week of the season. What did you find interesting about him? And what did you find interesting or memorable that didn't make the piece?
Like everything is my first answer. Like I was captivated by Scottie Barnes. I was interested in him before the draft because I read a few, like that was the other thing, is like, it was sort of intimidating working on that one. So one of the reasons that took a while was I had all these like great long form Scottie Barnes profiles that like I was competing with. Like if I was going to put something out there, I had to have some stuff that wasn't in the other ones. But I read those stories And I was like, this kid is not like a normal, you know, depending on when they were written, 18-year-old, 19-year-old, whatever it was, kid. Like, he was a guy that was talking about like being a Magic Johnson fan. He was a guy who, I mean, he was picked fourth in the draft, but was coming off the bench for most of the season at Florida State and was like happy with it and not complaining about it. He was a guy that oftentimes when people were kind of trying to explain why he was viewed so highly despite these like supposed flaws in his game, like why, okay, this guy is not necessarily a one-on-one scorer yet based on what he's done in college. He's not necessarily ever going to be like a go-to guy and whatever. This is like, to be clear, the scouting reports at the time, I think he showed more of that in the NBA, but at the time it was like, but he is so good at everything else and people love him and he wants to make guys better. And people just like, you talk to him and you believe in him. Like a lot of the reasons for why people thought highly of him, a lot of the reasons for why the Raptors were confident taking him and taking him, by the way, when like they knew it was going to be seen by a lot of people as a huge risk, as frankly, the wrong pick. A lot of people immediately said it was the wrong pick, but they were betting on the upside, and the upside was based on, yeah, he's this like 6'7", 6'8" guy with like a super long wingspan and he's like really agile and skilled and all that. But I think more than that, it was the person. It was like, we think he has the super high ceiling and we think he's likely to get there because of who he is. And all of that was like just a little bit different to me. And I just kind of wanted to know more about him. I want to know exactly what, you know, his old coaches had to say about what he was like. He had an interesting family story, which didn't end up actually being that big of a part of my story. But yeah, it was kind of, it was a combination. Sometimes I'm drawn more to like the backstory and sometimes I'm drawn more to like the way they play on the court. But for me, it was both for him. Like I remember watching him in the preseason last year and being like, every time he's on the court, the Raptors are more interesting to me. And every time he goes to the bench, I'm a little like let's get Scotty back in there. Like part of that was, I think he was new, but part of that was like, he is like a really exciting player to watch. I was just drawn to that guy like immediately.
What did you find in your sort of story search process that you found even more interesting than what you had originally thought?
I think with Scotty, he had this combination of, how do I put this? Like, he doesn't come off as arrogant. Like, he talks a lot about, you know, what's best for the team, just wanting to do what the coach asks them. Like, even in my research, I remember finding, like, a game winner he had hit at Florida State, and he, like, basically didn't want to give himself any credit for making the game winner. While at the same time, like if you talk to people around him and even if you ask him like direct questions about his own game, like he has this belief in himself and this confidence that is like not, it's not humble. It's not, it's like he believes that he belongs and he always kind of has. And I think he's had a vision for himself, honestly, since he was in high school of like, I'm going to get to the NBA. And when I get there, I'm not going to be just another NBA player. There's another story that came out after mine that I was jealous of, where it was like a list of his like affirmations and goals. And like one of them was like, I want to be the best player on the court at all times when I'm on the court. Like one of them was like, I want to win Rookie of the Year. And it's like to step into a situation like that, where even though like what he's saying, like when he's asked about like, you know, the team and his rookie season, he's like, I just want to fit in. I want to make other guys better. I want everybody to be smiling and having fun and all that. That's all true. But he also believes that like doing it that way, like he can dominate a game that way. And
interesting.
I think he is a guy that like, yes, the Raptors have had to like work with him on like being more assertive and aggressive and looking to score, because then if you're seen as a huge threat scoring, like you can go do the thing you actually want to do, which is pass the ball and like rack up a bunch of assists and be a point guard. But at the same time as them trying to like make him be more aggressive that way, I don't think that's this thing where he's like looking at this situation kind of like unsure of himself or intimidated or anything like that. I think he truly has had a plan and he's like been pretty bold about following that plan and working toward it. Even like the way that he approached the pre-draft stuff like a year and a half ago, where he like very clearly like wanted to show teams that he could do a few things that were sort of like seen as knocks on him, and show teams like, I've gotten better since the end of last year, and you're gonna see that if you get in the gym with me. And also, like, I have a plan for these interviews where you're gonna come out of here like loving me and wanting to spend more time with me, and you're gonna be texting me after these interviews. And they were like executives were doing that. Like, I think it is who he is. It comes very naturally to him. It's easy for him. But I think also, like, he's very smart, and I think he sees the big picture, and I think he is like, you know, he kind of had a blueprint for what he wanted to be from a pretty young age. And like, I had absolutely no idea about any of that before I started reporting it.